This is Edwin O'Shea providing a reading guide for section for this for the second half of section 2.2 for Math 235. We're going to jump straight ahead to the subsection entitled Differentiability. It talks about, let's read the opening carefully. Given a function f and a value x equal to c, there may or may not be a well-defined tangent line to the graph of f at c comma f of c. Now, before we proceed on, what does it mean to have a well-defined tangent line? Well, remember the tangent line, the only thing that's up for debate is whether the slope, which is defined as a limit, exists. And that's exactly what definition 2.3 is saying. It's saying the function is differentiable at the point C if this limit exists, namely, if the slope even makes sense in the first place, if it's uniquely defined. Notice there that just like the definition of whether of when a limit exists, you also have one-sided differentiability at a point, just because you also have one-sided limits. That's exactly what definition 2.4 is saying. And then immediately after definition 2.4 is maybe one of our most important examples. I know we talked about the absolute value function before. Now, before even reading through this example fully, let's just think about the graph of f of x equal to the absolute value of x. You could see there's three figures down here below, and you should expect there to be some trouble at that sharp corner at x equal to 0. Like, you really don't have a sensible notion. Like, even if you were to think about things, intuitively, in terms of like thinking about the intuitive notion of our kissing line. Like, most of the time, our kissing line was, it seemed to be like it was, we had a unique choice. But here in this instance, you could see that you've lots of choices for kissing lines, right? A line that stays on one side of the function at the point x equal to 0, but kisses only that point. You could see there's lots of such choices for that. So, very intuitively, that's the reason why f of x equals to the absolute value of x is getting us into trouble. The fact that we've lots of choices at that sharp, pointy corner. Thinking about it again intuitively, we can remember that we thought about the tangent line as being the headlights on a car. Now, I don't know about you, but this road is, the blue road is not one that I'd like to go on my car with. Because it would be extremely hard to make that turn in a smooth fashion. So anyway, let's read carefully through that example right after definition 2.4, and it says, for example, consider the function f of x equal to the absolute value of x. A limit, of course, is defined, in a two-way, depending on whether you're coming from the left or the right. So here we have f prime of negative of 0, which, is really just the slope of the secant line as you're coming from the left. And look below at the first picture on the left. It's telling you the slope of the secant line is minus 1. And that's pretty consistent as well as you're moving closer and closer to 0 from the left. In contrast, moving closer and closer to 0 from the right, this f prime plus of 0 gives us a slope of 1. And that makes sense geometrically with the picture as well. Because as you move closer and closer to 0 from the right, the slope of your secant line is consistently 1. And then the third picture then on the left gives you the derivative as a function to the right of 0. It's just the function f of it's the function where all values are equal to 1. To the left of the function, or sorry, to the left of 0, it's the function where all y values are equal to minus 1, and then of course it's just not defined at 0. So this function f of x equal to the absolute value of x is not differentiable at 0. The derivative does not exist. Okay, we see some other examples here next. We have a corner at x equal to 2. We have what's called a cusp, or like a pinching kind of point at our function. And then the third example, we have a vertical tangent line at x equal to 2, also not defined. Okay. Theorem 2.5 is a big deal. It says, so we talked earlier about functions being continuous. Now we've talked about functions being differentiable. And theorem 2.5 says something really strong. It says that if your function is differentiable at a point, then your function must also be continuous at that point. And the proof is there, and we can read through that carefully as well. Notice that you might wonder, given that differentiability implies continuity, is it also true that continuity implies differentiability? And you could see our earlier example of f of x equals to the absolute value of x shows us, in fact, that that function is continuous at zero, but it's not differentiable at zero. So in general, so differentiability implies continuity, but not the other way around. Just because a function is continuous doesn't guarantee that that function is differentiable at a point. We already spoke, next subsection is tangent lines and local linearity. We spoke about that the last day. That was in the reading for the last day. But take this opportunity once again, anyway, to look once again at theorem 2.7 on local linearity. Again, the big idea is that a function can be approximated by its, sorry, a function at a given point C can be approximated faithfully by the tangent line at that point C. All right. And now with that in mind, we're just going to jump straight to examples. And let's jump to let's jump to example 5. It's talking about the derivative of a piecewise function. Now, it'll be very helpful to draw this picture. The picture here for this function is drawn lower down in the solution, but it's very helpful to draw the picture f. And just intuitively, once you graph f of x, you could see that you're in trouble at x equal to 1 once you draw that graph. But try to pay very careful attention to how the derivatives are defined in terms of limits. Right? Pay very careful attention to that. And notice that it works through, it also writes down a formula for f prime of x as well as a piecewise function. Notice that when x is away from 1, be it on the left-hand side or the right-hand side, the derivative is, you'd expect it to be well defined because on either side of 1, it's just defined as a line. But the derivative does not exist at x equal to 1, just what you'd kind of expect it from the picture. Example 6 is a function that fails to be continuous. It's kind of solidifying what theorem 2.5 was saying. So 2.5 was saying that differentiability implies continuity. And example 6 is talking about the contrapositive of that, right? So equivalently, if you fail to be continuous, then you must also fail to be differentiable. And this is a nice example as well. You can see it's not continuous at 3. And now try and define, look at the secant lines as you get closer and closer to 3. From the left-hand side, you could see these secant lines are becoming closer and closer to being vertical. Consequently, the derivative, the left derivative in particular, is not going to be defined. Example 7 is approximating roots with local linearity and Newton's method. We'll talk a little bit about this in class. It's maybe difficult to talk about with just, doing the reading. But what it's effectively doing is that it's using the very important idea of local linearity to approximate roots. And what's the main idea here? Well, skip down to the picture. This is the graph of f of x equal to minus x cubed minus x plus 1. So we can't really say what the root is for sure, but here's what we do instead. We say, well, I'm going to have a guess that the root is maybe at 0. I could see immediately that that's not true. But if 0 is kind of close to the root, then it means that the tangent line at 0, namely the red line here that you're seeing in your text, the tangent line at 0 would cross the x-axis close to the root of the original function, right? Now, it's hard to find the root of the original function f of x, but it's very easy to find where a straight line crosses the x-axis. So you find where that straight line crosses the x-axis. In this example here, it looks like it crosses it at 1. And then you take that root, that new approximation, and now you kind of sequentially use 1 now as a new approximation to your root. So let's look at the next figure. You could see now that they're saying, okay, well, the root is maybe close to 1. I'm going to take the tangent line at 1. And the tangent line ought to cross the root, sorry, ought to cross the x-axis, again, closer to the root. Now, and then what you do is that you just keep repeating this process, where you're getting closer and closer. Now, the difficulty here is that, you know, it's hard to be able to see, like one thing that's difficult is, how do you know that you are getting closer and closer to the root each time that you use the local linearity? And I should say that there are some bizarre examples where if you make a bad guess at first, then you won't actually converge on the root. But most of the time this works, and it's something that we, you know, we'll talk more about the subtleties, you know, of this in class. But read through that example carefully. I'll do one example of this in class as well before you get to this reading. Okay. Now, one last thing I wanted to jump back on was also example 4. And it's finding derivatives of functions that involve roots. And maybe just start off with just that first paragraph. Note that it claims that it looks first at if you had a squared minus b squared, you know that's a difference of two squares, right? And you would say it's a minus b times a plus b. Now this takes a slightly unusual viewpoint, and it says, well, look, what if your a was equal to the square root of z and your b was equal to the square root of x? Well, then you could say z minus x, you could view z minus x as the square root of z squared minus the square root of x squared. And then you could write that as a difference of then you can treat that as a difference of squares formulas, except your a is square root of z and your b is square root of x. That's kind of a little bit surprising at first, and you might wonder, well, why would you even want to do that? Well, let's jump ahead here to the example. It's asking you to compute the derivative of the square root of x. You write it down in terms of a limit, as a z limit. And this is, you know, an example of a derivative now that's much easier to compute if you write it in terms of a z limit rather than a h limit. And now, so you're left with this limit of square root of z minus square root of x divided by z minus x. And now what it's telling you is saying, look, recognize that the denominator is z minus x. And then you have this factoring formula, right? And once you invoke the factoring formula in that second line, you'll see that the square root of z minus the square root of x cancels above and below the line. And then what are you left with? Well, then you're left with the limit of 1 over square root of z plus the square root of x. And you can just compute that limit straight up because, well, you can, because you just get 1 over square root of x plus the square root of x, which is 1 over twice the square root of x. Right. In the next example, it writes it as a h limit. I think this is a lot more awkward, actually, to write this as a h limit. It works just fine, but there's this idea of multiplying above and below by a conjugate. But read that example too. So example 4 relates to those derivative questions that we just skipped over from the homework from the last day. I think it's questions 29 and 30 and questions 47 through 50. Example 4 will come in very handy. Exercises 69 through 80 are just like examples 5 and 6. And then questions 81 through 86 is using Newton's method. And we'll talk a little bit about that in class before you have to do this reading, because it is a little bit tricky, but it's really wonderful. Notice especially 82 82 for the exercises is f of x equal to x squared minus 2. That's exactly the root of that is the square root of 2, as we've spoken about in class a fair bit, hearkening back to, I think it was, exercise 80 in section 1.4 on the bisection method. We'll show how to use Newton's method. We'll show how Newton's method is a very powerful way of finding, of approximating that square root of 2 in class. All right, enjoy the reading.